Cedar Hills, this Tuesday, June 29, 2021, it is 7:00 PM. This meeting is being held at the Community Recreation Center. And we begin by pledge allegiance, led by Councilmember Miller, followed by invocation given by Councilmember Ellison.
Will the audience please rise? Join me in pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father, in heaven, we are grateful to gather tonight to discuss items pertaining to the city of Cedar Hills. We pray for the hand and all decisions that we make that will be for the good of the community. And we will be aware of how we can help others and create a city where people will enjoy to live. Pray for our servicemen and women who are abroad that they will be blessed. We are grateful for their service, and we thank you for the many blessings, including the most sure that we can.
Thank you. All right. Item number two on the agenda is the approval of the meeting's agenda. Can I get a motion?
For approval of the agenda.
Thank you. Councilmember Ellison has made a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Who wants to take it?
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember, get a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That passes. We'll move on to item number three, which is the public comment portion of this meeting. We've set aside time for the public to express their concerns and ideas, and each person who has signed up on our list has 3 minutes. You can approach the podium, state your name and address, and then you've got 3 minutes to make your comments. So, no, it's okay. So, I don't have a timer here. Let me get that set up. All right. So, do I have that? Took care of this. They collect thousands of golf balls constantly.
that hit their home. Now, I just want to advise you of that because they've never asked the city for any help or to reconfigure the golf course or any type of help whatsoever or to have the golf course reconfigured. The law protecting this city from such lawsuits is long-standing, centuries old. It's there for very good reason, because if it didn't exist, every airport, railroad, factory, mall, and golf course could be shut down on a moment's notice by one unhappy homeowner with buyer's remorse. Well, the simplest and most expeditious way to handle this, and I'm not your lawyer, one last sentence. I'm not your lawyer, but if I was, I would tell you, the simplest way and most expeditious way to handle this is to invite this single complaining homeowner to file his lawsuit, the judge will dismiss it as frivolous, but pay the city's legal fees, and that'll be the end of it. If he was going to file a lawsuit, he would have already done so. But he didn't, because he knows he has not one legal leg to stand on. What he's trying to do is bully the city into spending millions of dollars to reconfigure a purposely operational golf course to increase his own property value, because he's upset he doesn't have a home next to a golf course and he doesn't like it. I'm sure you all received my four-page letter this week. I would ask that it please be attached to the minutes of this proceeding.
Okay.
And I'll be happy to, and I would urge you to read that again and consider the consequences of any action you're considering. I'll be glad to field any questions. If you have any
comments, we don't usually engage in questions during public comment, but thank you. And we will enter your letter into the public record for everyone to see. And I did forward your letter on to all of the council members so they read it prior to coming to this meeting. So,
trust me, I do love this office. I love this community. We've been in my life, and I've taken in as family here. We really appreciate everyone. And that golf course is the primary use for it. But I bought mine.
Thank you
very much, all of you. Thank you. What a great job you do.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Our next person who signed up for public comment is that Morian Everhart? Mr. Everhart, you'll state your name and address.
Morian Everhart. I live 459 Colcatty Lane, right on the golf course side. So, just so you know, I've got 9 holes like this in my house. If you got hit with one of those, it would kill you, right? I bought my house knowing the golf course was there, and I bought my house because of the golf course. So, I knew the risks when I bought the house. I don't have buyer's remorse, so I just take precautions. So I'm not aware, but a concerned citizen. I appreciate the value that this course brings, and the beauty that it provides. And, you know, just so you know, if something were to happen and there were lawsuits filed or acted, would acquiesce to a single homeowner, I have a building defense and I would love to get paid for it. So, anyways, I say that in jest because I know that those are tax dollars that people are, you know, it's a public course. So, I appreciate you guys and the time you spent here. And thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Everhart. Appreciate that. Okay, Mr. Tom Harris. State your name and your address.
Tom Harris, 9640 Charleston Drive. And I'm here about the pickleball noise at Harmon Park. Since it's been in, I don't sleep in my bedroom with my wife anymore. I move across the house because of my morning wake up call every day that I hear through my closed windows. And I use the words annoying, upsetting, depressing when I talk about it. I appreciate the hours that have been changed. And then the two things that can be done are, and pickleball knows these things, because they made it quieter than pickleball paddle and dampened the noise. So they, as an association, knows that there is a problem. The problem is it can't be helped or enforced because the other half of the people still use the $2 Crestwood paddles, and that's the ones that are really loud. I think if you could enforce something with the quieter paddles, it would be okay. The acoustic fence, that is in lawsuits going across all over the country, that is the main fix, the acoustic fence. And you guys have put in, which I appreciate, the one side. I talked to the manufacturer why it's not working, and it's meant to work as a unit. surrounds the square or the rectangle of the court to bounce off before it gets out. And if there's any hole in the triangle, rectangle, then the sound just escapes. And if you can see the court, you can hear that as if the sound, because this is the acoustic fence isn't there. And I can see the court two or three from my house. That's why I hope it works. So I'm here to hope you guys will finish the acoustic fence, which will alleviate a lot of the noise. And I'm here for one person that's south of the court, and I'm here with some other neighbors, and also a neighbor that couldn't come today. But those two people, one again on the other side, south of the court, and one at 49 seconds. I'm trying to think of what I didn't say, and I did pretty good. So I'll just leave it at that. I hope you guys finish the fence. Thank you. And Chandler, thank you very much for being my ear. We've been back and forth. So I appreciate everything.
Thanks,
Chandler. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for coming. All right. Caesar Fallon. Fallon? All right. And so just state your name and your address.
Yes, my name is Caesar Falcon, and I live in 9624 Charleston Drive, Cedar Hills. I just wanted to come here and also say this honestly, I enjoy the part time from New York City, and I came here to do come to visit the Green. I love the Green, I like it a lot. Okay? But I gotta say, New York controls the rest of the planet. Okay, and I think we can do as a city better job. And I have right now earplugs next to my bed, so there's no plane to call in. And I finally, I was able to take a walk there last Saturday and see signs on each gate of the airport. Thank you. Those help. Okay, but still, there's sometimes you have some rebels that like to go outside of that and. Anyway, especially on the weekend when you want to have a sleep-in session, I have to go to the public and hear it, you know, because that's the only way I can sleep extra. And I was wondering, why can't you only hear it? If you're down there, you know, you hear it, but it should be much farther away. And then I look down, it's like, direct line of sight, sound travels direct. So, like I said, in the motion, I in the past few couple of weeks, we've had lights being on. I hope this week was better because the lights being on the park turned on at 10 o'clock. Last week, I was told that I needed to call the police, but when I called the office, I don't want to resort to that. So I did have to call the town when it was quite 11 o'clock. The kids were drag crazy and they were crying. So if you can, I don't know if it's been automated or if you can do it. That's what I really just wanted to say. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you. Mr. Goodwin's going to address the issue of the lights coming up here, so thank you for bringing that up. All right. Mrs. Brittany Lindsay, you are next on the list. Name and address in 3 minutes.
So my name is Brittany Lindsay. I'm actually running for City Council in Cedar Hills. I actually just wanted to start off with a comment. I love our city. I've enjoyed being a citizen here for almost 3 years now, and I had a few questions, but it seems you guys don't answer the questions. Okay, so I can just ask Lena that after. I did have a comment though. So I had signs that I posted. This was for a cheer camp. So I posted these signs like maybe a few weeks ago, like a month ago. And then I received an email stating that I wasn't allowed to put my signs up. Which makes sense because if that's a city ordinance, then that's a city ordinance. But then right next to me at the church and like on the little roundabout by Walmart, I see signs for someone else's business that says dirty windows, blah, blah, blah. And I was waiting for those to be like picked up, thinking like maybe someone just overlooked them, but they haven't been picked up. It's still like right by the church. And it was like on the roundabout last time I looked. So just to be fair, yeah, just make sure. And then I will just ask my questions after too. Okay.
All right, thank you. All right, we have our last public comment by by Mr. Charles Lockhead.
Hi, Mayor, Council. So I'm helping Brittany with her campaign for city council, and we want to gather information. We're not sure how to do that. So I know you don't answer questions, but what does someone do besides come to city council to ask a question? Like, we want, you know, public records of finance, for, you know, the public records that are available should be all the records, financial records, minutes of the meetings, everything that's been decided by the board, the council. So my question is, how do we get those addressed? If we're trying to gather information, gather data, how do we do that?
Everything is posted on the city website, minutes from the meeting, city council.
How far back?
There's probably like 10 years worth.
Okay, that's plenty. And how about any other data? Like, do I have to use...
This might be something that we better handle.
I can, if you want, I'm happy to have this conversation with you. If you can give me your name and number, I'm happy to give you a call.
Okay, great. I'll get with Chandler then to get the information you need. And then I live 40, I didn't say my name, sorry. Charles Loveday, 4306 West Harbor.
Thank you.
And I just want to support Tom and Caesar. I, you know, I face the park. I'm just next to the gated community, right next to the airport. And, you know, I'm used to the dynamic noise now, but I get what they're saying. It would be nice to have the acoustic fence completed. And there's probably not a way to mandate that people use the paddles that don't make noise. But unless you live right there, people, I can tell you, pickleball is extremely loud. And it's disruptive because people show up at 5:30 in the morning. And the lights went out at 10, I appreciate that. But anyway, we'll talk to each other.
Thank you. All right, that concludes our public comment portion of our meeting. And we are going to... move on to the consent agenda.
I mean, just one brief comment.
Sure.
I know we're not really to comment on this, but these are all my neighbors.
Okay.
Very small people. And I live.
I love the game.
And I live 1 street away, so I can concur. I mean, even though I'm 1 street away, I can go out of my house at six in the morning and I hear the pickleball pops. And I don't hear it inside, maybe I'm far enough away that I don't get it. But once I step outside, I don't say the public is open either, but I hope we are going to try it, guys. I just want to let you know that there's something.
All right, so our consent agenda. Do I have someone who would like to motion to approve the consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you. Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Second by Councilmember Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we'll move on to city reports and business. We'll start with Mr.
Goodman. This is on. Just as a report for the Recreation Department and Community Services, we've had a number of new summer camps we've tried this year that have brought in additional revenue. We're excited about the participation there. And the new rec coordinator who's doing a great job of bringing in new programs into the city. So look for a lot of new programs that the city has not traditionally offered to come up on the website. So we're excited about those. Things are starting to pick up here at the building as kind of people go back to normal lives following the coronavirus. So we're looking forward to seeing people in this facility as well. And then golf continues to have had a great year, so we're excited about the opportunities for golf. We have some registration programs for flag football, soccer, tot soccer, and team flag football open for the fall. And then science classes and Lego camp for the fall as well, so we're excited about those offerings. And then I want to remind the city about fireworks restrictions. We have, as you know, we've added new fire restrictions. Everything on the east side of Canyon Road is prohibited, and then there is additional restrictions in certain areas of the city, and I encourage people, if they have questions about it, to go to the city website for more information. Let me follow up on a couple items that were brought up regarding the pickleball. The lights have been fixed because we went from an analog timer to a digital timer, weird, this new technology that we have, but we're excited about the lights being off at 10. And then we had it hung up some temporary signs that indicate to pickleball players the times that they are allowed to play. They are temporary because they're just laminated paper, but we've ordered some permanent signs. And just so that everyone understands why the acoustic fence wasn't put all the way around the facility, the courts, was we didn't want to create an attractive nuisance for teenagers and their lustful passions. So that's kind of why it is the way it is. As for public safety purposes, police officers need to be able to see into the park. So we will explore some other options of what we can do, and I'm happy to continue dialoguing with the neighborhood down there and see what the city can do to improve that situation. But I'm all ears as to solutions. So thank you.
Yeah, I remember that conversation. You talked about the fence going all the way around, and he's advised us not to, but we need to be able to see into those courts, especially after hours. So we will figure something out. All right. Councilmember Miller, do you have any reports?
I just want to say it was fantastic to have a family festival and have a normal family festival. And it was great to see everybody take part in the traditions in the community. It was such a wonderful job. Robin, Jerry Ann, and everyone else that helps. And it really is one of the highlights of living here.
Yeah, it was great. It was so great to be together. Already looking forward to next year. And they're already planning for next year, so that's great. I just have a couple of things I want to thank our fire representatives, not here tonight, but on last Wednesday we had a trash bash over at Harvey Park, and the fire department joined us. We got trash, and we picked up a lot of trash, and we have this before, but here are the two most popular things we pick up. Water bottle caps, not water bottles, caps, and socks. I don't know what's happening over the park, but we picked up so much trash, and it was so great, it looked so nice when we were done, so I appreciate them, and we're going to continue to have these trash bashes at the parks to help keep our parks beautiful. I just want to report on a meeting I had with Representative John Curtis. He met with, I'm a part of a group called Electric Community Law, and he met with some of the women in that group just to update us on what he's doing to represent us in our area in Washington. And he made a comment during that meeting that I really appreciated. He said, if there's no zoning in a city, I don't want to live in that city. And I love that statement because it affects things like, when can people come to the park and start playing pickleball? When do the lights go out? Like, all these things that make your quality of life better is because we have rules that control these things. And I know it might make things a little tight for some people, but it really does help improve our quality of life. So I appreciated that. So that's all I have at this moment. Councilmember Allison.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you guys know that I covered the American Board community outreach meeting for Mayor Anderson while she was gone, and I enjoyed it. I loved it. American Board Hospital, yes, thank you. And we are getting Primary Children's Hospital coming in behind, which I learned a lot about. I was really impressed with the fact that $250 million of that has been paid through philanthropy efforts in our area, which is really great. Things, you know, for our community. It is going to be pretty much similar to the one that's in Salt Lake. There's a few things that are still going to happen in Salt Lake, but all of the NICUs, all of the areas are going to be twice the size currently high. And so, you know, too late for my kids, but not for my grandkids. So I'm grateful, you know, that we're being one so close. We really are lucky to have one coming, being that we have one in Salt Lake already, having another one so close, but we do have quite a few children in the state, as you all know. But anyway, that's I am not on my phone, but I cannot pull up my computer, so I'm on my phone looking.
not on Facebook, not on Facebook.
Can you help Trump?
Some budget adjustments. This is the last meeting of the fiscal year. Our fiscal year ends June 30th. Those that weren't here last June were budgeting very conservatively, knowing that the pandemic, most of the projections were very negative. What would happen, but stimulus and inflation, a lot of the and the local economy here in Utah performed much better than most of the country. So as the year has gone by, we've adjusted as things have opened up, whether it's events, seminars, rec programs, and we had a lot of growth in the building, just one subdivision by Walmart sewer cleaner of weekly homes. So normally we'll get like 4 new homes in a year, and this year we're, you know, 30, 40 homes. So those are some of the adjustments on the revenue side. Sales use tax, we always budget conservatively on our sales use tax. We take a 3-year average, and we don't get the impact fees and other cities do that have only a few homes. And we use that money to pay for things like Hardy Park and other improvements. So the other adjustments on the, this is the general fund, it's our operating fund. Ask for it's picked up. Only festival, we budgeted low on the donations. The donations came through higher. Our rec programs rebounded pretty much closely to what they were 2 years ago. And our weddings are still down, events and rentals, but it's better than last year where there's nothing going on. As far as adjustments, as you may know, the unemployment, I'll show some slides later, but that unemployment is super low in Utah County right now. And we've had quite a bit of turnover in each department over clients. And human services have all lost people during this last year. And we wanted to reward those people because we had a that have been loyal and that have stayed and done a good job for the city. And so that's the proposal is retention. Pay for those that stay permanent part time or full time. So there's some transfers we're also making. We're making a $700,000 transfer. We try to maintain 17% fund balance for emergencies, which is the national standard by the Government Finance Officers Association is 2 months of revenues. Our planned transfers to capital projects, which later in the presentation you'll see the various projects that were, whether it's parks, also have a debt levy in our city for the golf course. We pay around $350,000 every year. We charge the residents about $40,000 less. So when we have a little better year, we chip in some money to golf debt service funds so the residents don't have to pay as much on their property tax.
Charles, is that the term now as well, or is it just...
No, we're just trying to keep the rate low. And then classy roads, we try to keep our roads nice. And so this is just classy roads funds for paving and service fees. You can see golf had revenue-wise, we budgeted conservatively. Last year was a record year for them. Rain fees and then are projected to do better this year. Also, I think the record here in the pro shop, I think it got to 90,000 before, and it looks like we're going to be around 120,000 this year. So that, these are just main numbers on the far right. That's the actual stuff we have so far. Another month. Season passes have gone way up this year too. We also have adjustments on the golf site. We have retention pay for them, so those are our best fund points. We have more investments into repairs, maintenance. When you sell more stuff in the pro shop, we have to buy more stuff, so the volume of clothes went up. And then we have a transfer of the golf fund, which approximately, I think I'm projecting around $550,000 in fund balance in the golf fund at the end of the year. And so some of that money would go out to help pay for golf improvements. And then classy roads funds, that shows the transfer in from the general fund, shows a little bit higher on the sales tax we get related to roads. Golf debt service fund, you see the money coming in, $50,000 to help keep the property tax lower. And then in capital projects, with the Cedar Canyon development, we've had quite a bit more impact fees than we normally do, so that's the adjustment to that. So we're projecting over $120,000 this year in park development fees. That might seem a lot to you, but most of the cities around us are over millions. I compare it to most of them. Classy roads, that's right. Yeah. So revenues, if you've ever taken an accounting class or when you've gotten it, revenues are credits, liabilities are credits, expenses are debits. A little confusing, so that's why I put the language in there, increasing revenues or increasing expenditures.
Charles, do you have a laser pointer?
So we just went through the capital projects. So the next, that shows the money coming in. Water and sewer fund. We've had part of the increase is when. We don't usually have that many houses, people that build in Treasury have to pay for the investment into the system. So we've had quite a few homes built this year, and so they council back in 2006, I think, made a rule that you pay your part, so that's basically adjusting the law.
the water impact fees, sewer impact fees, that's the new housing. Okay, and this is the adjustment for the employees that are allocated to water source funding. So, any questions on the proposed?
Do you have any questions or comments on that? Just straightforward. Okay. Well, there's no questions or comments. I would entertain a motion.
Mayor?
Yes.
Public hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are not ready to make a motion. We have to have a public hearing on this portion of the meeting. Thank you, Pauline. If there's anyone who would like to make a comment on this portion of these budget amendments, now is the time to do that. Is there anybody who would like to make any public comment on this item? Okay, yes.
I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
When you said you were trying to do college tax stuff, I mean, that was like
thank you. I appreciate that. I like that public comment. That's awesome. Okay, great. Then we'll close the public comment portion. Now I will entertain a motion.
I make a motion to approve resolution number 6-29-A.
B.
Okay, a resolution adopting the
2022 budget, July 1st, 2021
to June 30th, 2022. Okay. Which, I remember this a lot, usually they're down here, so it goes really fast, but I want to make sure everyone understands. So some of the priorities for this next year is retain quality staff. We feel like if we have good staff, we can get better service to the residents, and they're better off. Turnover is expensive. And we also want to improve our operations as much as we can. We also want to maintain good roads, so we'll see investments in the roads. We want to improve our water system. There's some federal funding available for that, and so we'll talk about that later. Planning, there are several things we're looking at related to planning and admin, whether it's improving Sugar Hills Drive, adding fiber, general plan updates, survey for the residents, and improving our branding. We're still always looking to improve our parks, so we have Harvey Park, final phasing, shade benches. We have planned improvements in our master plan. The next parks coming up are Carriage Park and Corral Park. So you see some things on this later related to that. We're trying to add more youth programs, which Greg has already done, and it's in Kansas this summer. And so, like I mentioned earlier, unemployment is super low in the state, even lower in our county. Average crazy stats right now. Average monthly wage increased by over 10% last year, 6% in the state of Utah. Gross taxable increases in Utah County were 15%. In the other 9 or 8 years I've been here, it's usually been like 2 or 3% for our state. So it's not something that I would count on. I'm treating it more as a one-time revenue until we see a long-term trend.
We'll take it.
So inflation is the highest since 2008. So that's something to watch.
You can see this in the housing items in the appraiser, 24.9% home price appreciation, so don't try to flee there. Utah is 80%. And Utah County housing units is the top, it's top in the state. This shows trends last year, this time versus this year, this time. We have slightly more property taxes just from new growth, more homes. Sales tax, you see the growth we just mentioned. Franchise taxes, that's your gas, like Quest Guard, I guess it's called now, Rocky Mountain Power, and Comcast are easy to get from that. Motor vehicle, our share is actually down this year. That's based on property tax levies. So our share of property taxes is less than the other entities, so we receive less. Or the sales of motor vehicles are slightly down. And that might be just because of a lack of inventory. Telecom taxes, that's the cell phone impact. We're just getting less every year. That used to be $100,000. Our taxes, that's a positive thing, our sales taxes up, that's our point of sale in our community. Used to be around 30,000 to 40,000. So we're seeing better sales with Walmart, Taco Bell, and these other places. Swift. Yeah, that's probably all Swift. I have no idea which one is the main one. They're not so sick. All those places are helping. Just to give you an idea of our property tax amount we get for operations versus other cities like Alpine, we definitely have the lowest amount. So Linden and Alpine have our closest population, but even if you double it, these other cities are asking more per population. So just to keep that in mind, we haven't raised property tax. Sales tax revenues, you can see this year the dash line is abnormally higher than other years. The other ones are offering a group much closer. So, yeah, I'm treating it as a one time thing. I don't know if this is long term trend or not. This shows the year to year program revenues showing. Green fees compared to last year, which was a good year. Pro shop had a great year. See, weddings is down slightly, and rec programs are up. And then growth. Right now, we're about the same as we were 9 years ago. So our city's population is going down. Why is that important? Because sales tax, most of our sales tax is based on our population. About 75% of what we get in sales tax is based on population. So a city like Linden, probably 80% of theirs is based on point of sale. Ours is off. So overall, our fund revenue is budgeted lower, and these are due to three main things. One is we take a 3-year average on our sales tax, which I mentioned earlier. We don't count on another Cedar Canyon next year, so that's gone down. And then we have a one-time grant for CARES money from the federal government. So those are going away. Applied expenditures and transfers are approximately $1 million lower. Most of that is, I guess, due to transfers. You guys should less until we know where our money is going. We still subsidize the golf course about $100,000. Even when they do operationally positive, we reinvest it in the course. That's always been on the equipment. And other components. had less legal costs this last year. We had building departments, Jeff's department has taken over a lot of the northeast of the outsource, so that would save $35,000 contract rate there. And then there's a 3% American increase budget. No increases for health insurance this year, which was rare. But we did implement a new wellness program that was not included with $1,000 for all employees. And there's 3% increases for their government body. So in the street fund, these for next year are the planned streets that would get a surface treatment. They just received mill and overlay, but this HA500 matrix, what it does is it extends the life. And the newer they recommend putting it on, the newer it is. You might recognize some of these roads just being done, and this will help them last that much longer. Like I said before, this has 600,000. We are conservatively 177 less than the current year projections, but 50,000 higher than historically. Capital outlay plans included replacing the bridge with railing and 72,000 for tractor boiler and pot dresser. We may postpone the bridge. We feel like we can do better on that. And we've maintained the bulk debt at $6,000, even though our actual debt is that we raised it. Capital project plan highlights. These transfers were projecting about $2 million under restricted fund balance. We get about $65,000 a year for parks. Approximately $15,000 of this is set aside for food cycle. I think American Fork is $1 million, so that might sound like a lot of money, but we try to make it stretch. We just don't have the point of sale that other cities have. Harvey Park, like I mentioned before, we're going to try, we've already purchased a bench with straight circuit. So we can look at pickleball noise. I have more concern with line of sight, but then the reason we had the cost of that. Park renewal, so there's a couple parks we're looking at. Improving parking, improving that here, creating sand garden, and court improvements. Building improvements of 100,000. We have had a lot of HVAC issues with this building lately, and there's always something. There was roofing the year before at public safety building, so we set aside money if there's a large expense or something like that. We've set aside $950,000 for golf course improvements. Working with John Boyd, designing, as you'll see later, he's like nationally known and has won many awards. So Doral Park, this is a concept, landscape structures. I do not have spacing, they measure everything out. I do not measure it, so it's not me. I just say that's cool, or that's me. That's correct. So
I bring your kids over.
So there's Tata, yeah. And I have kids around, staff's kids, and I'm test up and say, hey, yeah, we like them. So there's some toddler swings, and this is a toddler focus because nearby there's more of an older kid focus. Basketball court and greater climate. So.
Heritage Park, that's not the design of the park, that's just one of the designs of G. Brown Design. We're working with, they're doing a survey right now, and they should have a sketch drawn up by August that we can look at. We're going for more of a woodsy looking playground and more location. So this is some of the qualifications of John Foy. It's not on here, but like who I do in the 70s was amateur of the year on the PGA Tour. Hurt his back and got into first accounting at BYU, graduated later in accounting, and then decided to get into design. So over 26 years of experience in design, he's won numerous awards, best in course, best in innovation. His courses have had over 60 national championships played on. And you might recognize one of those names to the South Island Country Club. He's the one that does this
capacity. Okay. I asked Charles if I could jump in at this point and talk about where we are coming back here and maybe where we're going by step for coming we have here. We've had a couple, let me go back to the beginning. When the course was first designed, we put in 35 foot mats, and there were no homes there. When homes started coming in, it really became apparent that 35 feet was too bad. We raised them to 50 feet. Based on no study, just staff's crunch of time, and their wooden poles, and felt like that would be adequate. And it was for a little bit. Well, when the wind decided to knock the poles down, we decided to move to steel poles, and we kept them 50 feet. However, it came really as that neighborhood there fully developed, it became really apparent that there was still an issue with the number of walls that were looking for that. Staff did a study where we tried to count how many walls are estimated to be going over. We estimated to be about 2 to 3% of the walls that are hit. So from that point, we contracted with an individual who did a trajectory study to see what should the netting look like. And it was readily apparent from that study that the netting that we had here for the driving range is narrow as ours, and next to the visit road is inadequate. And what they were recommending is more like what we can see at Topgolf, about 130 feet of net. So the netting project that he proposed was 130 feet netting, I think, really had a negative impact on many view sheds around this area. If you can imagine that, about 3 times higher. And staff really developed the idea of how this may not solve the problems, like a temporary fix. Golf has improved their equipment. People are able to hit farther, higher, faster. This could be a temporary fix. So what we did was we thought, well, let's look at a new professional. Let's talk to a design professional. We've designed professionals for our parks, and working with Charles, and thought, let's apply the same principle here as a design professional. That's how we came in contact with John Foy. Immediately on the conversation on the phone with him, it was readily apparent to him as well that your driving range is too narrow. It's the net's too small. I can see the problem you're having. And so what we thought, what can we do with driving range that will still be exciting for people, that will still drive revenue, that may be unique. And so this was the idea that we proposed. It's multifaceted. So the driving range is down. This, you can see this area, this underlying aerial here of the neighborhood. The clubhouse is right here. You have an existing putting green up here. You take the park path down to the driving range, and this is where you hit from, and then there's a road that's on the very south end of the course.
One thing is the cutting green's almost 3 times larger.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Sorry.
But what we're looking at initially, we're looking at just the driving range. But as John came out and visited the course in Arizona, he immediately began to identify and isolate problems on the course that can really improve the play on the course and make it not just, I would say, an easier course, but a more enjoyable course for people to play. So starting with the driving range, we
we changed this into a short course, like an executive six-hole short course, where we can still charge fees for people to come and play the short course. But rather than hitting driver or hitting drivers down the course, your tendency to go over the net. We start here and you have SRC, that's 100 yards, that was 110 yards, that was 60, 80, 90, 78. And it becomes a chip and putt course. You know, and one of the feedback I've got, you may remember the email that came in a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, from somebody emphasized that there should be more family options, of course, more for my kids to go and learn how to play golf. Well, I think this is a perfect solution for that very guy. And every time I grab my clubs and I head out the door to go play, or I don't play that often, I play like four times a year. When my kids see me, my golf clubs go, yes, can you take me? I never want to take them on a full 18 course. I barely want to be on an 18 course. I can barely have patience about that. But with this course, I can bring my 9-year-old son and help him learn how to play golf. I think that's something that is readily apparent. When John came out to the site, we looked at our putting green. You can kind of see this red line, faint red line here is our existing putting green. He said, what you need to do is you need to create an environment that is attractive for golfers, and you need to start by fixing your putting green. Your putting green is about a third of what it should be. And so part of the plan is to expand this putting area, flatten it out so people, as they come to play golf, they can warm up with the putts. This here, right here, is a 10-day hitting net where the proposal is that as people come in and they book their tee time, we hand them 5-6 balls and they can go take 5-6 practice swings into the net. At the end of the day, we pick up the balls. Part of it also is adjusting these tees as well. When he came out, he looked at these tees and said, these tees are, they're kind of based in the wrong direction. They need to move to the north a little bit, which I think will go with it towards leaving some concerns you heard tonight from the neighbors down below. And then as part of the short course, that whole 18 would be moved from a par 4 to a par, sorry, from a par 5 to a par 4 by removing these tees and moving them up to here to prevent those balls from being on the short course. So it would be a 71-hole course rather than a 72. And his input on that, after having designed numerous courses around the country, he said that's for a golf professional, that's not an issue. Some people may not like it, but he's like, from a design professional, it's a standard. You still need a championship type course standard.
The top rated course is par 70.
The proposal right now, we're working with him on a course-wide redesign, and that means evaluating the bunkers throughout the course, the way that the greens are shaped, the way that the tee boxes are shaped, the design of the fairways, the placement of the trees. And what we're looking at is just like what any of you may look at in your home after living there for 15 years, saying, what upgrades do we need to do? What upkeep do we need to do to keep people excited about them? And I'm looking at it the same way in that. What upgrades do we need to make to the golf course to keep it exciting, to keep some of the momentum that we've seen over the last 2 years, to keep people coming? And I think that with this short course, there's not anything in this area, of course, in our best area, that is like that. But I think it opens up a whole new facet of what we can do, of course, with the community. So, this is the first time you've seen this. I'd love to hear your feedback, I'd love to hear your questions, concerns, comments, anything you have.
What is that? I can't see that far. Down on the bottom one. That's right.
This right here?
Does
that actually? No, that's bottom left.
Bottom left. Right,
yeah.
So that's the existing pad that people can drive off of. Right?
They will still be able to drive.
So yeah, that's part of the problem. That's part of the equation that we talked about is, you know, you come to a tournament and people want to hit a few drivers before they go play in the tournament. People are playing golf tournaments usually aren't the ones that are hitting the ball with the net. But what we thought was, well, in those cases, we leave these hitting nets here. We can temporarily open up the driving range for a short period for people to play on. But here you have. Rather than just hitting down the course, you actually have 6 targets that you can hit at, right? So this is just leaving the existing bays as is.
So then it's also cheaper not to demo it.
It's also cheaper not to demo.
The netting. So is that little red dotted line, is that what you're saying, the netting? For the driving range area, what do you call it?
No, we would
this, none of this is any. What these are, there's, if you look down there, there's, it's kind of tiered. The top tier where this cement pad is the highest tier that you could hit off. This is where you would hit off the mats. And then the existing contours show that there's a lower bay and then a very lowest bay where you can get off of actual grass.
Okay, so
it's
not.
So it's just the existing contours.
For some reason, I thought we talked about a short range map or data.
Yeah, that's what this is right here.
Okay.
It's moved up to here because we didn't feel like golfers, if they wanted to use it, they wanted to drive all the way down here to use it rather than
now everything's walkable with it.
So we're trying to place this in a manner that doesn't obstruct views from any of the wedding venues.
Does he have a concept of that? I'm not sure that I've ever seen.
We can send one out. We've seen them.
Okay. What would you say? A couple of course, but not like an individual one.
The one I showed him, which is doing a smaller scale, is the Wynn in Vegas. They have a
Falcon Ridge also.
They have a warm up area.
So, as the resident golfer on the council, all events been out there a lot lately. Wasn't going to be good. And well, Kelly says we're going to be too, but Kelly's not here. I kind of just, first time I've really seen it, and I'm kind of just a little. I like the practice area getting bigger up there. I'm not trying to do shadow turning 18 and 5 par 4, I mean, but. I don't know.
The reason for that is so they don't
safety. Yeah, I know it's a safety thing.
I mean, if you wanted to add smaller nets,
yeah,
maybe you'll do it in a manner.
Or maybe to add nets right at the right options in the box.
There's a cost associated with that. They're much more affordable. Something else, we've done kind of some preliminary analysis. Our driving range traditionally has brought in $20,000 to $40,000 in revenue each year. This. We feel like this would generate a lot more revenue than this driving range.
Any estimates on that yet?
We did a preliminary estimate. I just want to get my computer set. What did you do?
Well, so then the next.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about it. Current practice range revenue is, like I said, between $20,000 and $40,000 outside of the cost of rainfalls and fencing improvements. We spend probably $3,000 a year on rainfalls.
$5,000, excuse me.
So most Utah Park 3 courses are priced at $9 to $10. The 9 holes pro is to build several courses in Utah County as well. Park is Utah County's only park for the offers. Pro Bowl allows their participants that are 6 years and older. Each time the Pro Bowl is between 6:30 and 9 p.m. During the afternoon, you get 9 participants an hour, and they allow groups of 6 every 5 minutes. Put them along with that course. At $90 per participant, Cedar Hills would need approximately 4,500 participants to earn 40,000 or 25 participants a day for 180 days, which are priced at cost of revenue. Cedar Hills average 10 participants per hour, 10 hours a day for 180 days at $9 an hour, and the course would bring in 162,000 annually.
It's not very hard to match what we're getting.
You eliminate the need to buy rain calls as you have before in the traditional sense, but there would be additional costs to maintain it. You're adding 6 rains and 12 tee boxes. So you're looking at the expenses of mowers and labor to do that. But quite frankly, when I saw this, I was actually quite excited about it. I thought this is a really neat thing for the course, and I think it can actually be something that. I think it would be utilized quite a
bit. Can someone come and just drive?
Come drive? No. That would be
so extremely dangerous to anybody that you
do. I don't mean drive a car. I mean drive golf balls.
No.
Like driving range. No. There's no just.
No. It was shut down for weeks. When it was open for the chipping course, it would be close to driving.
You would have to man it with a facility there, like a starter's booth or something like that.
I wouldn't recommend doing it that way. I use the existing software that we use to book tee times and start probably every 15 minutes to see where that takes us. That's about what we do right now. Is it right for 15 minutes?
I'm sorry, what you had?
The booking tee times right now, of course, is 15 minutes.
10.
10 minutes. So I think you probably need to go 10. Just because it shouldn't take you that 10 minutes to get it through 100-yard pole. There's no carts down there. You grab the cart down, park it, and it's, you walk the 6 holes. You should be able to get through the whole thing in no longer than 45 minutes.
And so financially, you're saying that you feel like this would be a better option as far as revenue, long term.
Yes, we have enough cost, obviously, to develop, but the long term, I do believe that it is definitely more financial to keep it for the city and government revenue.
So, we have number 15 back in the park, right?
We actually talked about that. We talked about, let me go back here. Because we talked about, because the 15, whole 15, the old whole 15, old Park 5 that we're seeing Andrews in, whenever I talk to people that are nostalgic about the golf course, it's that hole that they talk about. That's another money hole. We've talked about this in that, you know, if this is successful, we have, and this is a far-fetched idea, and I have no idea on the cost, we just brainstorm some ideas about renovating the course, is to bring back that hole 15, eliminate hole 18, and make this into a 12-hole. Or at least 9, using the existing 18 there.
We are going to have him propose a long-term management plan for the course, and he has looked at some options like that.
There's some really interesting options to consider there when you're thinking about the land that the city owns and what you can do with the golf course.
I do like the idea though of a master plan because I don't want to be doing, you know, these changes every 4 or 5 years depending on
it. Well, it may be phased, but I'd rather do it every 4 or 5 years with following
a master plan. Exactly, that's what I'm saying, instead of just changing direction every
year. And you had to do that without my country plan. You can't get that off.
Right.
So, yeah, we're looking at, I mean, he came and walked our course, looked around our course, and he said, you know, you need to be pointing the bumpers. That was the one thing that really hung on initially. He said, why do you have so many bumpers? You don't stack them and maintain them properly. You don't fill them with sand properly because you don't budget enough for it. We have 41, 42 bunkers on the course?
Currently, but we're cutting it in half right now.
42 bunkers on the course. How many does Augusta National have?
I can't remember what you said, but it's very similar.
And he said, why do you have so many bunkers? And they're not placed in the right places. If you're picking up logically placing bunkers, there's better places for these. And you should have bunkers that you maintain. We're looking at ways that we can, you know, improve the golf course, make it easier to maintain. These are all goals that we're doing on.
He's driving around with our superintendent, and he's calling him on the weekends or whatever, and he's talking to him about ideas. So,
we've regained it now.
Yeah, right. He is currently working on that golf course master plan.
You know, I just request the next time he's out here that I can possibly join the certain duty walk the course.
Absolutely. I love that idea.
I invited you last time.
When?
You were going to try to come, but you couldn't the next one.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Thanks for the invite.
You're welcome.
I do have a job, too. So
he's a good guy.
And it's a really hard job this time. I'm sure. This year.
So, with this, I know this is, we've brainstormed a lot of ideas over the year. This is something I think that solves some of the problems we hear about, but does it in a way that I think really moves the golf course in a positive direction.
One question I've got is, what does that change to the existing netting? Is that netting still needed?
No. Is this netting still needed? Oh, sorry. Yes, this netting is still needed. Yes, it would be the existing netting.
So it would stay.
It would stay. Yes.
It would stay. Can you look back to that thing?
Part of the problem is just pure vandalism. We would probably actually explore not netting, but fencing off portions of this course to keep people off the course. If you've ever had to clean out a cup in the morning,
I can over talk. I can forward you the picture.
But vandalism is definitely a concern, and so we want to make sure that we are protecting our assets no matter what. But yes, we can leave that.
Okay, does council have any more questions?
I'm going to turn back over to Charlotte.
Okay.
But I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to present that portion.
Thank you.
Can I just say thank you?
Oh, yeah. you guys for the counterpoints. I mean, new ideas is great, okay? So we can mull them over and maybe make some changes.
I don't know if you want to make public comment. This is an item that public comments will be opened at the end after Charlie's presentation, so please include it.
So, water and sewer fund is the next one. So, right now, there's two rates that don't really cover all their costs. And that's the water rates and storm rates based on our expenses. And so, I have tried to minimize our increases, but I have a 3.2%. We have requirements to maintain service coverage. And so, we have to have 25% higher revenue than our expenses every year. Or we don't comply with our debt service requirements. And this helps us do that. So here's an example of if someone uses 6,000 gallons, what would the monthly bill be with one garbage trailer, one recycling trailer? They're going to pay $1.10 more next year. Not if we are doing those. Some of the projects we've reached out to a couple engineering firms to get proposals we just need to decide on which was supposedly like better. Orox, Emily, and Collins have given us proposals for replacement well study. Because Heritage Park isn't producing the same amount of water as AMS does. Quite a bit down, and so we're trying to anticipate covering that water we need, and that project could cost well over $3 million. So that's something we're hoping we can use some of this federal grant money for. It looks like we can use it for preliminary water type projects. We're also looking, they haven't shown that the Water Smart grant's available this year, but we're always looking to see if there's other grants that will help pay the things. Motor pool funds, last fund, vehicle.
Kind of bad, just like, because how many years ago did we replace the motor Harvey Well? Wasn't that long ago? I mean, not Harvey, Heritage.
Harvey Well, not Heritage Park.
Harvey Well, the one that we kept holding the roof to do.
Yeah, so. A month ago, I summarize it because I go into detail in May or April, but several things both caught me well.
And that was one of those things to do with my had the air and it was coming up.
And they had to slow it down.
It was 2015.
Yeah. So it's really been 6 years?
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah. So. Motor pool, we replace vehicles every 3 years. We showed in the last time we had city council that people actually paid us to have a vehicle. So, you know, the market's really good right now. We pay fleet pricing plus net sales tax, so we hold it a shorter period of time. Generally, our costs are under $200 a month. Last time we actually got paid by $200 to have the truck. So there's a decrease in motor pool charges for this upcoming year, and it's about, in the general fund water sewer fund, there's an increase in that. So, any questions on the overall budget?
Anybody? Before we end your portion, I just want to thank you, Charles, for your hard work every year on the budget, all throughout the year, and how conscientious you are with the city's money and the people's money. And I don't know if everyone's aware, but Charles did receive an award for his excellence in financial reporting from the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States. And it says the report has been judged by an impartial panel team with high standards of the program, which includes demonstrating a constructive spirit of full disclosure. We clearly communicate its financial story and motivate potential users and user groups to read the report. This certificate of achievement is the highest form of recognition in the area of governmental accounting and financial reporting, and its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by government and its management. So thank you, Cheryl, for your great work. Thank you. Yeah, I don't think we have any questions, so we're going to move then to the public comment portion of this item. So if there's
yeah, it'll be on the city's website.
It'll be on the website.
Yeah. I have to put the updated one in the morning.
So I don't expect it.
Yeah, yeah, because there is one out there, but it's not the one we saw tonight. So yeah, probably like around 10 o'clock, it should be there.
Season pass here, every year since I bought my house 3 years ago. I will be unable to play this golf course if you eliminate the driving range. I noticed that part of what I do as a lawyer for 35 years is work with people to design and build golf courses. No golf course that Mr. Walker has ever designed and worked on didn't have a full-fledged driving range. What he will not count me on is that people like me who play this course every day spend thousands in that pro shop and bring a lot of people in here to play golf. I will not play here if that driving range is eliminated. People want to come to a driving range, and I mean every day. There's a lot of icy people every day at that driving range who come to this golf course specifically for that reason. Without a driving range in this golf course, it is no longer a serious golf course. You're going to lose millions of golf rounds a year without a driving range because they don't want to go up there and hit a few balls in the net. I'm a scratch golfer. I play every day. I won't be able to play. I noticed, by the way, that that individual who you're working with does not ever design a golf course that doesn't have a full-time driving range. This is my area of expertise. This is what I do for a living. He cannot get a golf course without a driving range. The first question I have is, and I think it was already answered by Mr. Manager, is this, we have to ask ourselves, why is this really being done? The real reason it's being done is to accommodate one homeowner who complained. I've heard it mentioned 3 or 4 times now. If you were my client and you are not, and I'm very impassioned about this, I would tell you never to accommodate that individual because you are getting yourself into legal jeopardy and everyone on my street can bend over now. What are you going to tell these people when they say, what are you going to do for me? I don't want to come here and play a short putt-up for a short ball. I want to go hit drivers. I don't want to do any of that. And frankly, Commissioner Dennis probably doesn't want to do that either. I want to speak for them. You can't do that. Go to Fox Hollow, see how many people play that golf course, and every game day it's full all the time. You can't look at a driving range and say, oh gee, it doesn't bring enough revenue. What you're not counting on, and I do this every day to my clients, is you're not figuring how much revenue you're going to bring in because that is there. You can't just, in my letter to all of you, I express that very clearly. For a number of reasons, you get in a situation where people don't want to play golf. They're not going to go play a little putt-putt course down or a park three course. Somebody who's just learning and their children, they don't want to hold up other golfers. They don't want to do that. I want to come to this golf course as a serious golfer and actually play a golf course after I've hit every shot in my bag, every club in my bag. I don't want to get into a net for 2 minutes. I come here and practice all the time. I buy dozens of those passes to hit golf balls on the range because that's what serious golfers do. I still say this is being done to accommodate one person. Very obvious, but be honest about it. And that would be the biggest mistake the city could ever make is if you turn that into a 6-hole golf course. There are a lot of things you can spend $1 million on to make this course better, like changing that hole back there to a par 5. So then you can actually, that this course would then be able to hold professional golf tournaments because it would be a full-length golf course with another par 5, which should have never been eliminated in the first place. And you're going to chase golfers like me away. And don't kid yourself, there are a lot of people who play golf very seriously. You may not recognize it. They would have hit balls on that range. They're not coming here anymore. Me, I'll have to join Alpine Country Club or go play at Fox Hollow because I won't be able to warm up before I play golf. No one seriously playing golf is ever going to walk to the first tee, pull a driver out, and start playing. They warm up for a long time, not just when they're going to have a tournament here. There are other ways you can accommodate people who want to learn how to play. There's plenty of room with this golf course, and you can sneak in, you know, some putting areas and do other things. But I can't say it emphatically enough. You cannot eliminate that driving range. People like me who no longer play here. I live on the second tee of this golf course. I bought my home because it was on this golf course, and I love it, and I love everything about this course. I praise Greg, and I praise Wade, and he did a tremendous job. And that's why I love this golf course so much. But please, don't take one of the three legs off the golf course with this driving range. And again, this individual you're working with, I'm surprised he would even say that. His credibility went to zero in my mind when I heard what he said they were going to do and eliminate the driving range. He didn't eliminate the Alpine Country Club where they had three driving ranges. He has, I know the other golf courses that he's worked on. Not one of those courses doesn't have a full-blown driving range.
That's not true. He's done a lot for Donald Ross courses on the East Coast, but don't have full driving range.
So, sorry, your timer went off with silence, but.
I understand. Thank you for reaching my passion delivery.
Okay.
I'm very serious about that. Serious golfers are going to stop playing here. They're not going to be attracted here.
Thank you, Mr. Bednar.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to this item, Mr. Warren?
Yeah, I just, again, I think you're on the other side. We can get access to this on the website, site, Polly.
Yes, I'll have, I'll have all the updated by tomorrow morning.
So for me, people live on the golf course, I get it. They're passionate about golf. This gentleman's very passionate about golf, and he knows a lot more about golf than I do. But in my mind, this meeting today was about the budget, but we've spent more than half the time talking about golf. And 90% of people who live in Cedar Hills never use a golf course. Like, for example, we give free golf, games to people. I've lived here for 17 years. I never use them. So what I'm saying is, just think that we're spending an inordinate amount of money to upgrade a golf course. And I can tell you, I can't pay me right now. I ask everybody. So if you want to keep subsidizing golf, is that what you want to do? Not one person of the hundreds I've spoken to has said yes to it. And essentially, in this city, we subsidize golf. That's what we're doing, right? We got the golf course, we're stuck with it, right? But then how much is this going to cost? This upgrade, how much does this cost? I mean, from what I saw there, it's, we're millions. Millions of dollars to upgrade a golf course for people who love to play golf. But like this gentleman said, passionately, within 5 minutes of here, there's two great golf courses. Right? So, and to turn this into a championship course and all that, that's just a city this size that, we're not Augusta. We're not Pebble Beach. It's just, and if you look at the stats, 250 golf courses closed last year in the United States. Why is that? 90% of those were municipal golf courses, just like this. Why is that happening? Well, they're money losers, just like this. We have long-term debt. So there's a lot of us in Cedar Hills who, if you're passionate about golf, great, go to Fox Hollow, go to Alpine. But dumping more money when we have a long-term bonded debt just to keep the course alive, plus the taxes to keep it going. So for me, passionate about golf, that's great. But I'll end with this. If you were passionate about roller derby, I know it's ludicrous. If you're passionate about roller derby, should we fund your roller derby passion? If I'm passionate about car racing, should we set up a drag strip? If Brittany's passionate about basket weaving, should we subsidize that? That's the thing that drives me crazy, is why is it a bunch of guys running around hitting balls is great. I play golf too, but why are we subsidizing it to the exclusion of other things? 90% of the people who play this course are men, right? Well, the highest percentage is men. I rarely see women.
That's true, but it's not 90%. There's a lot more women than
men. Yeah. So, I get it. I'm done. But this gentleman here had 9 minutes, right? So what I'm saying is...
Yeah, 9 minutes. So I'm sorry, the timer didn't go off, but now your timer has gone off.
Yeah. So just to end with, we're subsidizing a game that a lot of people love and play to the exclusion of, what about everyone else? What about the rest of us who aren't passionate about golf? And that is the main thing, and talking to people, that's what I hear. People don't want to subsidize a game for a bunch of guys to hit golf balls. Well, we don't have a rec center, we don't have anything.
All right.
Just make one comment.
Sure.
And anybody, all the rest is here. Now, I know you're not compassionate with what you're saying, and of course, I would encourage everybody to go to our city website. We had a Blue Ribbon Golf Committee that came up with lots of ideas. It was a broad range of citizens that were on that committee, and it was very thorough, and it was done about 6 years ago. How long ago, Greg?
About 6 years ago.
Very thorough, okay? It explored lots of ideas. So if you have issues, go read it, study it, and then, you know, and then comment. Okay? That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. All right, we're going to, anyone else? Sorry, before I close the section. Okay, we're going to close the section. Okay, actually,
I was studying that was done in 2012 when they had like a group agreement study, the golf course, and come up with solutions to different ideas on what they could do with it. Is that what you're talking about? That's probably the first. They did one in 2012. Uh-huh. 3 years later. The more. They did another one. 2015 was much more comprehensive. Yeah. Okay. And that's on the website. So, okay. So I'm actually going to rewind a little bit.
My comment, first comment, is about the parks because I have four little kids. And I can never play at Harvey Park during the day. It makes me so sad because I love that park, but it is so hot. It's so hot because all the equipment is metal. So in regards to that new park you guys are thinking about building, please consider putting up flags because that is like every mom's dream when you put flags over the park. I mean, you can actually play in it like for 5 more months of the year because in summer that thing is just like, I can't touch it. My little kids can't touch it during the day. So that's my comment about the park. I do have a question. I don't know if you're allowed to answer it, but the change, the $1 million project, how will that affect taxes of the residents?
It will not.
It won't affect them at all?
Not at all.
Where does it come from?
Savings.
Savings?
Yeah. If you'd have to get
one
the big...
It's a one-time
expenditure. There's no debt. It's kind of similar to how we funded Harvey Park in that there's no debt for Harvey Park, even though we spent nearly $7 million on that.
Mm-hmm.
When we do big projects as a city, is this working? When we do big projects as a city, we recognize the property tax burden on the community. And that's always a topic that we discuss, you know, and that's why Charles said we budget conservatively, so we budget very low on revenue. You know, even though we're having banner year for sales tax, you won't see that's reflected in the proposed budget, that we have another banner year. We expect, we base on trends, and when those trends exceed our projections, we have extra money that we can set aside for these projects, for park projects, for arts projects, for golf projects. It's projects throughout the whole community that aren't targeted to one group of people. It's not just golf. It's every group that has an interest in the city. We try to put money into making our community better. And I think that's reflected in the parks, in the golf, in the trails, in anything that we're doing. That's staff's perspective. So that's where I'm going to attack it from.
Certified property tax rate presented by Mr. Wolf.
So each year we have to approve certify or approve a property tax rate. The county gives us what's a certified property tax rate, which means this would be the same amount of money if you had with any new growth. So if a house moves in, they add in that house and they say, that's what your new amount is. So what this proposes is that we keep property tax rate the same as we have for the last decade. And that rate for this upcoming year is 0.001495, which is the combined, the general operations is 0.001058 of that, 740,000. And then the golf debt portion is 0.000437. So, what does this look like? So, for example, a home with an assessed market value of $450,000 has a taxable value of $247,500. And based on those rates, $370 would be due to the city in total. So, when you look at your property tax bill and it's over $2,000, only $370 of that is related to your city. This just gives you a history. The rate keeps going down based on the values of the homes going up, but it's for some reason the rates, if the homes values went down, the rate would go up the same.
Charles, is it calculated the same way that it is for the county to achieve a specific budget, and that's why the rate fluctuates?
Yeah, it's all based on values, and then so the values in your area. So the county is basing it, theirs is the same way as ours, where they get new growth on top of whatever it was last year. So they go, okay, we have so much new growth, this is what we get if we do that same certified amount. But if we want more than that certified amount, we gotta raise the rate. You should do taxation. So if we do the same or less, you know, we should do taxation.
But it does adjust for growth.
It does adjust for the new homes and businesses.
So back to the budget, I hope you don't understand this right. You showed all the bar graphs that everybody's tax rate is going up. Ours is way down the bottom there.
Our
this
meant,
is because
yes.
We don't change ours.
It's because we never raised it the last couple of years.
Which is really unheard of. I mean, not unheard of, but it's crazy. I guess because I come from a fast growth area.
Right.
I'm used to those taxes going up like every
Eastern
year.
Well, here's the deal. The session will sell a session of house, whatever increases this year. So we're stuck with the certified tax rate. I'm just trying to explain it to layman's term. We're stuck with the tax rate that keeps it the same for us. However, this is only a small portion of, like Charles said, their $2,000 or $3,000 bill, whatever it might be. The rest is assessed like out by school district. They get the value, they get the increase because the value of your property went up. They get the same mill rate or whatever they call it. I'm sure, whatever. So your taxes will go up because your house value went up this last year. But the city gets the same amount outlying count. There's a few other people in there that get the benefit of
it. They get it pretty low. But it's also compared to other cities. So if our city, this area of the county, Lehigh, increased somehow faster than this area, then our taxes would go down. But if we're in the same taxing entity as Warren, we're just out from the school district. So if their homes don't go up as much, you'll pay more. It does. But if an 1980s home in Orem goes up 5%, yours goes up 10% in value, you're paying more to the district because you're getting that tax advantage. If you're in a neighborhood that goes up more in cereals than another neighborhood in cereals, you're paying more, and that person's paying less towards the city. So, try to find the dumpiest neighborhood you can be jackhammering in your rates and keep going in the city.
Unfortunately, most people do not understand that. They get their tax bill the next year, went up, oh, the city just got all these rates and taxes. Yeah, so I get that every year at tax, like, oh, the city
just on the good. No, I think what I was getting at is we're not changing our rate. We get money yet. So we're not changing our rate while other cities do change.
And we had concerns a couple of years ago, fortunately, you got this unheard of 15% growth. If you're getting 1-2% growth in sales tax and inflation's 3 or 5, then yeah, we could have to over time, do it once in a while. But we try to, you know, if you want to maintain the same level of service, we have contracts that are a certain rate. And if we try to cover those, then yes, we need to do something else.
By the way, just one other issue of this whole thing, when you do these numbers, when you say, an example, home assessed value or if you tax value, and the reason that's taxable value, I just want to point out, is because if you live in your house, you get a homeowner's exemption for living in your own house, so that's not, so you get a taxable break. But I, as an owner of rental property myself, the county is cracking down on properties that were originally, people lived in them, and they're not their properties. They're not living in there now, so those are all going up, just so you know.
Right. They get, it's considered commercial, I believe, that's right.
Yes.
For old, yes. You're correct. Yeah. So if you own any rental properties,
the rental properties that you do not live in,
yeah,
you, in the last 2 years, you are being contacted by the county, and they are reassessing them.
Yes. So a vacation home in Fairlake or somewhere else, you pay St. George, you pay
high. So the only reason to use that example as an example, that's for home ownership, and that's because it's given a homeowner exemption.
Okay. Very good.
I'm just clarifying.
No, it's true.
I'm just clarifying.
It's true. It's true. Anything else?
Does anyone else have any comment or question? Okay. That is the case. This is not a public comment portion, so I will entertain a motion, and this would be deemed on this resolution.
I will make the motion to approve resolution number 629-2021D, a resolution setting the total property tax levy assessed on real and personal property for general and rental purposes for the 2021-2022 tax year for this year's year.
Thank you. I have a motion by Councilmember Ellis. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Councilmember Perez.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passed unanimously. We move on to item number 11, which is changes to the fee schedule including utility rates and district fees. Mr. Kuhn is presenting.
Steps that we can take, and sometimes we continue to feel a little bit illogical in the program operations to approve the budget. These are the fee increases that support the numbers in the budget that we just passed. So, these budget was passed based on these numbers. I'm going to start with, you saw in Charles' presentation on the water source program fund, some adjustments there in those base rates and usage rates. So we can see what the new rates are, about
3.2%. 3.2 for water and 3.25.
3.2 for water and 3.25 for stormwater. That's what's reflected in these rates, base rates and usage rates. And then along with that, we're proposing that we adjust some of the fees associated with the rentals of this group. We have basically two sets of rental fees. There's just the normal fee and then there's the resident rates. Normal fee, you can see that we're proposing anywhere from $50 to $100 increase on the normal Sunday, Thursday, or Friday, Saturday resident rates. And that's partly, you know, we prided ourselves on being the cheapest wedding venue around and the cheapest golf course around. And that's been the mentality of the city for years. And there may need to be some mindset shift in that maybe we don't want to be the cheapest. We want to be a high quality destination. And I think that we have seen that. And I think that's reflected in some of the changes we've done with the golf course. But here the facility is one. So we're proposing a fee adjustment there. And then on the resident rates for Monday and Wednesday, which is our resident nights, we charge $20 for an hour per room and $40 for the whole room. And I will be honest in my assessment that the highest demand that we get in terms of staff time to set up events and to work at events is on these renters with the greatest expectations paying the lease. So what we're proposing is to make that $50 for half a room and $100 for the whole room for an hour, which still is for this venue. One item that's not listed here that we didn't go ahead and put in, but I want to add, let's make sure we add for the motion, any motion that's made, is that there's a separate rate for when you book a wedding on Monday and Wednesday as a resident rate. Right now, I believe it's $400. $450. We're proposing that, and that goes to $750 for the use of this room on Monday or Wednesday for resident or wedding. And then there's some clerical changes in that. We're adding the word fire here to mirror what's on the utility list, so it's easier to forge there.
Okay.
Any questions I can answer on that, Bill?
How does the staff build up? Is that going to be on the board?
I think with the renovation we've done in here recently too, we want to go step up, and I know what part of the package is going from square linens to nice round linens. I know Becky and the mayor talked about this quite a bit, so we want to take it up a step, and in order to do so, we need to do this.
And even at these rates, we were having our daughter's wedding here next month, one of the cheapest prices, and what you get for your value is amazing. So I still think people are getting a good rate, but we need to be a little more competitive too.
Well, I think we're experiencing inflationary cost adjustments currently, but we're posting that so I can pay people who are paid for having to, or the cost of living goes up, the cost of cleaning goes up, the utility costs go up. So I think necessarily this year is a change in the charge.
And one more thing, if I can just add with the resident rate, the reason we're doing that too is, to be honest with you, those are some of our worst clients. And I hate to make that sound bad, but when it comes to cleaning up and all that kind of stuff, they're supposed to do it, they're not doing it. So it's putting a lot of time and effort on staff. It's just learning about it. We just don't have staff to do it.
Well, along those lines, I thought when we did the presentation talking about renovating this, I was actually expecting a much higher increase. Compared to what we have around here, I don't know if it was going to jump to look like $200 rather than just $100. Is that enough?
And, you know, and right now there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of new ones that have just opened up. So, you know, again, it's just the philosophy of, I think we still need to maintain the lower end. So it's better to book more in a week at a lower rate than just one or two a week. Because I think it's just getting more bodies in here is the best form of advertising we have to sort of this thing.
Another thing, as we hire professionals to work on our designs for our parks, and now part of we've tasked the Fence Center to work with design professionals on updating this, not just with white paint or bathroom, but to let's look at the whole building and say, where do we need to make some changes? So that's another thing we're looking at doing in terms of staff. And that should, in terms of your, Councilman Russell, to your point, I think it makes the higher quality venue where you then can justify your higher cost.
Good. So we're out there, but.
I think this is a step.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, if not, then I will entertain a motion.
I resolution number 6, dash 29.
E.
Resolution adding many or deleting fees to the official fees, bonds, fine schedule of the city of Cedar Hills with the addition of adding the rate of whatever it is.
$750.
$750 for lanes that are done on the resident nights of Mondays and Wednesdays.
Thank you. Can I have a second? Second. Thank you. So I have a motion by Councilmember Gettis, second by Councilmember Ellison. Councilmember Gettis?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison?
Aye.
Councilmember Miller?
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 12. Review and action and public hearing on preliminary plan approval for Shiny Shell Car Wash located at 10002 North 4800 West in the SC1 commercial zone. Mr. Goodwin.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't recall if we saw a previous iteration of this site plan, but it was actually the original proposal was for this car wash to be located on the very south end of the commercial property just adjacent to those homes. And when that came about, there was a number of concerns in terms of kind of the impacts that a car wash would have on an adjacent residential neighborhood in terms of noise and just kind of cars going in and out. And so a recommendation was made by the Planning Commission to say, hey, why don't we evaluate the property? And the developers actually went and looked at it and said, yeah, let's do this, which is sort of in the contract. This is the existing Hearts building. So this is the existing Hearts building. That's the fueling station. So this is just the property that's immediately south of the Hearts gas station there. So talk about right here. So the proposals for a Shiny Shell car wash where with an associated Grease Monkey lube station here, where they would be everything that is accessed off from the north. So there's an access point here, there's an access point here, and then I guess there's three access points. We're excited about this in that it is an approved use in the area. The proposed site plan now includes a car wash and a loop center prevention with the flow of traffic interacting directly with the Hearts gas station. There will need to be a development agreement between the owners of the Hearts gas station and the owners of the Shiny Shell as access to this private access driveway. So I'll have to be a development agreement between the two. And that's been mentioned before, so I don't believe that should be there. One of the concerns was the decibel level of the vacuums. That was a concern that we brought up in the conceptual interface of the planning commission. So you see here, these are the vacuum stations here. There's seven plus six there, about five there, eight, ten there. They have a site in Murray. I went up and visited the site with a decibel meter. Stood with their vacuum bank, and they had two vacuum banks here. I think there's one right here for Murray. Jeff was from the Shiny Shell City. There's one on the corner here, is that correct?
Yeah. Yep, get out the corner there, and then the access point on the north central.
Oh, central, so right here?
There's one, yeah, it's one each.
Okay. So I stood in between these three big vacuums, and I took a desk to read. It was 95, and I, the equivalent of walking across the street drops immediately to about 70. That's not very long. So the distance to homes here, we've got, building and then a road and a fence. I don't believe that there's going to be an issue in terms of the noise. Planning Commission is very excited about the change of venue to the north. So we're going to support that. Parking, as part of my visit there, I wanted to look at the parking situation. Because they have, you can see three parking stalls here and a few here. Their staff actually utilizes these vacuum banks as part of during the day as needed. It's a fully automated system. As you drive through, there's a license plate reader that reads the license plate, has system lets me up and through, so I think on staff they have typically about 2 or 3 people. So there shouldn't be an issue with parking in the grease monkey. You can have employees park here, and then obviously the cars would be worked on at TDF, and nobody would slow down.
So, Shannon, that's 2 different entities, but are they one, and they're just
it's trying? It's one lot, yeah.
One company?
Two companies, one lot.
Grease Monkey, okay.
Two companies, you have the Shiny Show car wash right here, and the Grease Monkey.
And they're just
two separate entities.
Where is your company?
It's in Murray. What's the address in Murray, do you remember?
Yeah, 4608 South, 100 East. It's right across the street from the Walmart there, near 90th and Van Winkle.
And their vacuum bay, I kid you not, if this were their vacuum bay, there's a home. The home's starting up right there. It's close. So you've got holes. So in reviewing this, there's a few things I wanted to bring up. Our city code requires 30% landscape, and I think right now they're 23%. The planning commission is exploring an idea of a fee in lieu of landscaping, and that the city paid for this upgrade from rock mulch to grass here, and to say, okay, we want to count some of this grass here that was part of our commercial area, that's part of your open space, help us pay for the difference then, so they can get that 30% threshold by buying this. City Council, the Planning Commission working on some code there to allow them to do that. There needs to be an agreement on the reimbursement for the improvements along 4700 West and 9980. When the Gateway development was coming in, down here, and the Weekly development was coming in over here to the east, we didn't want the developers here to build half this road and wait for development to occur on the other side. So the city funded the cost for this frontage. That includes the asphalt, curb gutter, sidewalk, and all the utility improvements that are on this portion. So there would have to be an agreement to reimburse the city. I think the benefit to them on that is that they're paying yesterday's cost for today's development. So it's, I do kind of pay for it.
Is there a sewer issue still with that sewer?
I don't believe so. Is there a sewer issue on that one, Jeff?
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Is there a sewer issue on?
I thought the sewer was not created. They have to rebuild that sewer along that.
They have to rebuild the sewer.
That was on 9930.
It was on the lower one. There's a belly in the line, and we were waiting for you to see what that belly looked like after.
Okay. So I thought it was right in that stretch.
I think it's on this.
No, I think Mike was right. There is this one little piece there by the Taco Bell. Yes.
I'm just remembering.
Well, it's a belly, it's a minor belly, but we're working with that. That should be the responsibility of this development too. With it being a car wash, you may have heard of the permit route, but you will want to make sure that they turn over the necessary water rights to the city. The nice thing about this is they reclaim 70% of the water and reuse it. So it's not just a straight water use, it's actually recycling through the car wash system. I already talked about the access rear parks. On the landscaping plan, I will scroll down to it, but it shows those trees here on some of these corners. So we need to verify these clear vision areas as you enter and exit the property, that we're not creating some blind turns where people can't see them. And they're already aware of that as well. And then obviously everything that we do in terms of commercial development is subject to our engineering review, and that is happening as we speak. I know that they just got some of their license 2 days ago, so we'll be working on that. They are working on
So another quick question while you're getting that hurt. Is this a service that's taxed?
Parts of it would be, parts of it I don't believe are. I don't believe services like this are taxed, but they sell air fresheners. That would be.
How about the
I still think that's a service that maybe not the tax. Part of that is obviously a discussion at the legislative session each year. They talk about adjusting sales tax working for the state rather than just the purchase of services as well. And anytime that happens, you have every service industry in the state hire a really good lobbyist and change and prevent any change happening. So I think it's going that direction. If I would say I'm reading the tea leaves, but not right now. You understand that our commercial design guidelines require brick and ignore the color. But what they're proposing is this brick that is, it looks and feels exactly like brick.
Mitch Morris, 35 South Richmond Street in Salt Lake. The quick brick is actually introduced to us by the Grease Monkey facility that probably Harriman on there. They have a similar brick requirement, but they use a different color and flashing pattern. Obviously there's lots of different colors. This is the most similar one. In fact, from what I understand, the sellers that I talked to, he said that the Walmart in Cedarville is done with a quick brick, which their designs actually show that they're not. But the color would look the same. That's really similar to the Walmart color and design.
Are you coordinating with Grease Monkey? Are you guys coordinating on your building?
We're actually developing it for them.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to understand.
We'll own both. We operate the car wash in house. We'll develop both. Then we will lease the Grease Monkey.
What is your question?
As soon as we can get through hurdles. Then it's about a 6-month build time. So hopefully end of Q1 next year.
I like to move there. I think it obviously it's nice to see the commercial zone kind of fill in. But I think it works great next to Hearts as well. After you wash your car, you fill up your tank, which is what you do. So, yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
So, any thoughts on the expect building plans to come in following the approval. The building plans indicate what they intend to use. Normally, they use standard brick. This is actually a wall that looks, feels, is heavy. It looks like brick, and so we're looking for some guidance. Because it's great. Part of the problem with our code is it says brick. I mean, we don't define the size of the brick. So, I wanted to show you this. Obviously, like I said, ignore the color because the color's going to fit in with what the scheme is down there. But I like it. It looks nice. It looks and feels like brick.
I'm a builder. I use it a lot.
Any other questions, comments? I don't know if I have any elevations to show, but they are. I'm sorry, I don't. I had to switch to the last minute. I don't have the elevations.
I don't think we have a smart packet.
Are they in the packet?
They are.
The elevations?
They are. There's like 13 pages of plans, and they're the last two.
Question for clarification, maybe on this quick brick. That my understanding is the quick brick is applied to a masonry wall, not a framed wall.
Sorry, can you speak about my finger?
Maybe none of them aren't working. Just a clarification on the quick brick. My understanding is that's applied to a masonry wall. So it would be a block wall on the interior of the building and not a framed wall. So it is a substantial constructed wall.
Correct. As a masonry wall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So one thing we talked about is this whole course of brick down for this guy. I think we talked about that. And then they kind of have this modern look. We also talked about creating this from a metal roofing to some architectural shingles, and that's kind of down in the
This is, you can see this is the facade of the building. And this is the car wash with the grease monkey with the rubber, same way.
Kind of
lined
in that old room, I think it's cool, but. Yeah.
So we have our okay with that, and we can have a with that wise, so.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
I just want to make sure that anything we approve is conforming to the code.
Yeah. Well, I think we just approve that, I think it'd be great. Looks nice. Anyone else have any comments or questions? Want to say? If not, I will accept, oh, there was a public hearing. So if anyone would like to speak to this item. Looks like nobody wants to speak to the item, so we'll close that public hearing portion and I will accept a motion.
I'm going to make that motion to approve the preliminary plan of this shiny shell car wash located at 10002 North 48th West. Yes, you want commercial zone subject to no other conditions other than architectural review access.
No, there's a few things. Reimbursement agreement on the improvements, verification of water rights, agreement with parts gas station on access, landscaping, metal being approved by zoning, and then engineering review completed.
All the things, John.
Very good. Can I have a second?
I'll go in a second.
Thank you. No, I was thinking. Okay. Okay, so we have a motion to approve by Councilman Harris and seconded by Councilman Alford. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes unanimously. And moving on, item number 14. Review action public hearing on ordinance amending Title 10, Chapters 2, 4, and 6 related to driveways. Oh, is it 13?
13.
All right, we're going back. Review action public hearing on ordinance amending Title 10 related to park strips and landscaping in residential zones.
So as part of our effort to promote water conservation throughout the community, we want to look at some of the ways where we can reduce some of our water consumption. And one of the areas we can zero in on was our park strips. So as a city, we have these rules that dictate that park strips must be have certain types of trees, certain number of trees, spaced in a certain way, with grass. And this is not really a useful area in terms of connecting your family with a park strip. So we looked at these areas and say, okay, this is an area where we can reduce our water consumption. So what we would allow for is, we would still require trees. I think that's an essential component of our park that will bring value to the community. But the ground cover can be any sort of material. We talked about xeriscape, local scaping, and we also talked about pavers as well, use of rocks. We talked about a certain size of rock and scope in order to keep them out of our storm drain. To not have to be so susceptible to be kicked into the gutter or being sucked out of the storm drain by the back gutter. But you can see in the code, I don't get a chance to read through the code, that it's the duty of the homeowner to improve the park strip and to maintain it, but we want to give them enough leeway to do so in a way that we can conserve water. So that's really the goal of this code. I think that's kind of the Reader's Digest version. If you like more details, I'm happy to dive into the minutia of it. But that's really what we're going over here is to allow for water conservation methods to gain park strips. And looking at this as a city, we're hoping that we can lead out on this. We've identified a few areas throughout the community where we have park strips that get water, and they always get water during rainstorms because they don't have timers on. Rain delays. So we're looking at some of these areas and saying, okay, let's see what we can do here. Let's change these to pavers. Let's limit our usage here. So you'll see the city hopefully leading out on this in the coming years and just identifying over the course of time certain areas where we can make some of these water conservation changes.
Okay. Thank you. Residents have been asking to be able to do this for a while, so I think this is great and very timely in our drought. So. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I think this is something you kind of talked about on the past.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right, well, I'll open the public hearing portion of this item if anyone wants to speak to this item. Doesn't look like there's anyone who would like to, so we'll close the public hearing portion of our first ordinance of the night. So I would accept a motion on this ordinance.
I'll
motion to approve ordinance 6-29-2021A, amending Cedarville City Code 10-5-18 and 27 related to the landscaping partnerships.
Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Do I have a second?
Second, aye.
Thank you, Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Gibbs.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes unanimously. Now we move on to item number 14, review action and public hearing on ordinance amending Title 10, Chapters 2, 4, and 6 related to driveways.
So this one's been a long time coming. I remember we talked about this a long time ago. So this has been back, bounced back and forth to the fire department, fire marshal, working in a way that staff is comfortable with it, and we have some clear definitions and expectations when it comes to driveways. Let me just dive into this. In this case, I am going to get into the ratio a little bit, but I apologize. But what we've done is we've added in 10, section Title 10-2-1 some definitions. And I want to be clear on these because it's found throughout the code, and I want you to understand what we're talking about. The fire apparatus access road is a new definition. It's a road that provides a fire apparatus access from a fire station to a facility, building a portion thereof. This is a general term inclusive of all the terms such as fire lane, public street, private street, parking lot lane, and access roadway. For purposes of this code, this is where this is a key point, is that driveways are greater than 60 feet in length measured as a vehicle travels shall be considered fire apparatus and access roadway that shall meet the requirements of all current adopted fire codes and ordinances within any local adopted amendments. So what we're doing is we're differentiating between fire apparatus roads driveways. Anything less than 60 feet is considered a driveway, and there's the ability to fight fire or access the home via other methods like public walkways. So you see a driveway definition says vehicular ingress and egress route that serves no more than two buildings, and driveways are less than 60 feet in length. And then the final definition I'll go over is this wall that includes an interface area. It says lying area or zone where structures or other human development, including critical infrastructure that have destroyed the result in a hardship to communities, meet or intermingle with undeveloped wildland or vegetated fuels. So we do have a wildland urban interface area in our community, and it's everything east of Canyon Road. So when we talk about fireworks, we'll talk about these types of restrictions with the hillside zone. It's, for short, it's called WUI, I would say. But it's a wildland urban interface and it's east of Canyon Road. So when you hear that, I think on the hillside.
So I got a clarification on that.
Yes.
So, and I understand what it is.
Yeah.
And where in our code have we actually adopted?
In our code, we have not adopted WUI, but
we are trying to wonder why we're being subject to the guidelines on there.
Because we entered into an agreement, the wildland urban interface agreement as a city. That makes us subject to WUI code. A few years ago, we've done it twice. We did it with Long Peak, and we redid it with American Fork. The reason that we do that is that if there's a fire on the hillside, and it's basically our insurance policy. And that if there's a fire on the hillside, and we have to spend millions of dollars to fight it, WUI code kicks in, and there's reimbursement and ways to declare an emergency to have a lot of that money covered by state, county, and federal grants. So it's imperative that we be a part of that, especially due to our interface area there. So WUI is part of our code that we do follow, just given that we are a member or we have entered into an agreement with the federal government on that. So I want to distinguish between residential driveways that are outside of this WUI area and then inside of the WUI area. Outside of the WUI area, we don't really have a problem with the slopes of driveways, but we are saying up to 12%, and in any case, in no case can a driveway be longer than 50, greater than 15% grade. And that's obviously as measured as the vehicle travels. In the 12 to 15% range, the city would require code compliant steps so that in the event of the public safety emergency, public safety personnel can access the home without having to go grab their apparatus out of the driveway. Because WUI code does limit it to 12%. Inside the wildland urban interface, it gets a little more tricky, but it's the same 12 to 15% applies. But on driveways that are greater than 150 feet in length, and this is again WUI code,
that you have to provide with turnaround and an excess of 200 feet to be provided with turnouts, in addition to turnouts. So there's certain requirements that allow for public safety to safely access the property if the driveway is longer than 150 feet. And there's also a code that's not associated with this, but it's a building code that they would also have to have fire hydrants. We talked about that before, in order to allow for fire protection on the long driveways. Councilman Gaines, I'm sure you have a question about the answer.
So, I mean, I just want to like point out, I mean, we've talked about this before, and obviously I have some investment in a property that I have. This supposed to now be moving.
It's always been moving.
But I just feel like it's kind of restricted because this was a plot that's been approved, you know, 8 years or 6 years ago, whatever. Now it's been subject to additional requirements. Now, in all fairness, you did say that things could be grandfathered. No, mayor. Mm-hmm. For instance, the mayor's driveway would not be in compliance. Their driveway is 18%.
Well, we talked about not retroactively applying this to existing driveways.
Right, but also I might not have applied to existing approved lots.
Well, then there's no point in passing it by the lots.
Well, we did this for your bills.
No, I recognize that. Quite frankly, if you were already subject to you, this is already something that we would hold you to.
So my question is, any driveway that exists today is not going to be subject to.
I'm not looking to retroactively apply this.
Okay, so I'm specifically asking a question related to a specific driveway that is in excess of 15% for 100 feet of it.
And to be fair, Councilman,
and I've had discussions with my partner, and the fire chief has said we will not approve the driver that is greater than 12% that already exists, and I think that is completely unfair.
So, really, the only thing the box is saying is agreement with moving. That's what we have to go by.
I can come back and if you want a more detailed explanation of what WUI is and why we have it, and the reason for WUI, I'm happy to come back and present that.
Well, I would like that you could fix for me, too, because here's my thing. I love our fire department. I love AF Fire. I think they do a fantastic job. I'm 100% supportive of them. I get frustrated with the do-gooder, let's protect everybody by passing laws that are ordinances that only affect very small percentage. And when you have our fire, you know, our two fire departments, both when we were low key and now, yeah, they brag about, wow, look at this $100,000 brush vehicle. We can go anywhere now. You know, we can go up on that hillside. We're not going to be constrained with any kind of ability to get up and fight fires in our hills. And then we come up with, oh, but if someone wants to build a house on a large piece of property overlooking our city, ooh, for some reason that big fancy $100,000 plus truck can't get there now without turnarounds,
let me ask all sorts of things
that are kind of basic.
It's not the brush truck to worry about, it's the ambulance. And that's what's happened on the driveway question is that they had to bring the perforation down the hill because the ambulance couldn't fill up.
But under your code now, it says 60 feet, and I don't know. I know exactly what you're talking about, but is it longer than 60 feet? I don't know.
What?
The driveway that's in question. Not the one I'm talking about, but the previous one. Driveway's in question. The previous one I'm talking about.
It might be.
So we've got quite a few releases.
Yes.
What if we're basically ignoring quite a few drives that are not compliant and just starting this point moving forward?
Yes. Like I said, I'm not looking to go retroactively apply this because, and this is, honestly, this is why this is taking so long. This is session right here, because the buoy code prevents it from going higher than 12%.
I don't have a problem with the 12%, but a little bit of reasonable.
That's it right there, because if I have to limit it to 12%, I can pick out a number of lots on both sides that are very troublesome to develop, because there's, you know, you can imagine three lots. The two side lots are built out, developed, and have their steep driveway, and one in the middle,
yeah,
they have to build in a trough in order to get the 12%.
That's very difficult.
That's why we have the 12-15% allowance if you put in the required steps. Now, beyond the 60 feet, you're past a typical single-family lot residential driveway. You're into a longer driveway that has different requirements. And, I mean, you can play with the 60-foot number, but the 150-foot number where it starts to require turnouts and turnouts are, that's scaled by the loop. That's not safe.
And that's my point. I don't believe as a city we have actually ever adopted buoy requirements.
I respectfully disagree.
So, the question I got on this thing, between 12-15% for safe with the flight steps or a ramp or something like that, does that also work? Or is that just something that the fire marshal is looking for?
Something the building is looking for. But in the case of, let's say, the 14% driveway.
Yeah.
It's midnight in December, ice is on the driveway. They can't get up safely the driveway. That's why you have steps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it again, it's for public safety access to the home.
So I guess I'm just trying to figure out the technical part of this. Like, does moving specify 12% as the limit?
Yes.
So
that's why we're trying to differentiate between fire access, apparatus growth, and driveways.
Okay.
I'm saying changing the driveway less than 60%, less than 60 feet, is not a fire access apparatus growth. We're not saying that you are going to drive your brush truck or even your ambulance up that. You can park the ambulance in front of both steps if you have to.
So,
as long as there's steps, you can carry a gurney with a big heavy duke that's having a heart attack. You can carry him down those steps into the fire and into the ambulance.
So we're working around that by changing the.
I'm trying to listen to Council Gettys' concerns that I've heard over the months, along with fire marshal's concerns, to come up with a code that I feel kind of comes in the middle.
I don't think we're there, because what I think we're doing as a city is actually our responsibility to the, no offense, but the AFR fire department to say, wow, will you be able to build a house on this lot here?
If I was fire marshal,
well,
no,
it shouldn't be arbitrary. And the way that is presented is it does put arbitrary breaches. And that's why you have to have established standards to say, this is where
I'm saying, yes, why we with this. That's why I wonder why we would just jump in and accept the movie standards when
is it possible
to not
fire department to have its own standards outside of the movie? Like,
there's always code.
Right.
Building code, there's wildland urban interface code, there's Utah wildland urban interface code, there's also fire code. And so there's, anytime we turn around, there's a book that's really expensive to buy.
Let me give you a perfect example. I mean, three years ago, we switched from multi fire department to AFR department. Perfect example. A person that built a house on the hillside, built a house, multi fire, gave him the requirements because he had to put fire sprinklers in his house because it was on a hillside, correct?
Yes.
The minute the fire chief changed from the person that approved it to the new fire chief, the new fire chief says, this is completely unacceptable. If I were the fire chief, there's no way in hell this guy would have ever got that approval on a house. Now that was just in between two different, so that's why I don't think we should take, it leaves too much up to opinion of one guy, i.e. fire marshal, fire chief.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I think that's arbitrary and capricious, because one guy can make a decision that affects a multi-million dollar estate.
One guy.
Well, that's why it can be the guy that just replaced the guy that got fired.
Right, but that's why if he does say, I feel that this is unacceptable, I agree with you that that is. But if the next sentence is, because of this, and there's an established standard that they can point to, then it's not our
fault. I believe his quote was, they paid off the city to let him do it. That was his quote.
That's
okay, whatever.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What if, no, we're about winter time, right, not being able to get up early. What if the driveway is heated and doesn't develop ice? Like our driveway, we know it's an issue. Our driveway is heated. We can always drive up our driveway. Is that something that we can look at?
You can. But it wouldn't, under the current moving, it wouldn't just, doesn't address that.
We're
going to be holding our current calls.
So
yeah, I didn't measure your drive. They're about 18%.
I think what I would like to do, let me propose something.
You're longer than
60. It feels like we're in a mess, and I've been working on this since August, so it's another month. But if we table this, I'm happy to come back and discuss some more of the intricacies that we go through our brain to do that.
I'm happy to table it.
Then that
means
motion.
Someone else, thank you.
There is
so I think there's I don't know how all this is gonna go. I think there's a handful of things to dig into just to be clarification. If we have made this agreement, then we've got to work with it. We're in the agreement, we've got to honor it. So let's go ahead and take it, let's get the clarification on all that.
But I think it helps the council understand the details of why you're
agreeing. Exactly. That's, and I think that's, if we start moving along those lines,
we're approaching barber season, and I'll be honest, next week has new rules. But I'm hoping that we're not having to discuss moving in terms of something that's happened, but something that really happened. So,
That's the insurance.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of decisions. You could make an extension with a fire barrier, for instance. That's not addressing your ability.
Well, so
there's more than just fire. It's like you say, it's ambulance. So I agree with that. I'm not saying we don't
even have to be that same hang up, though. I think the hang up isn't necessarily fire. I do believe it is that ambulance is, and the ambulance and when you can actually say that. But regardless, let's go ahead and table this because there's still a little bit more to go.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to table it.
Okay, motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Do I have a second? Second. Councilmember Ellison seconds it. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. And item number 14 has been tabled. We're going to move on to item number 15. Review action and public hearing on final plat approval for Lake Shore Trails and Division 5.
This is very straightforward. On first quarter, there's two lots that are being joined with one lot. So it's not adding density to the project, it's simply taking two lots and adding to one. So the only other change is that the easement that runs down the middle of the two lots on the property line is being relocated to just be around the property line.
So I will be accusing myself on this one, but I'm going to ask a question. Did I give you that?
No.
Okay. There's a new plat that I will get to.
Yes, please.
Is that required?
No, we have one. It's just labeled the wrong letter.
Letter B or C.
It says letter C, but it needs to be D.
Okay, and the motion is correct.
The motion is correct. So this is correct.
But this is a public hearing motion, so we'll open up the public hearing. Do you want to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll move on to close the public hearing portion, and I will entertain a motion.
I'm all going to make a motion to approve the Lake Shore Trails Plan B.
Thank you. Can I have a second?
Second.
All right. Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, second made by Councilmember Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Let's move on to item 16, review action on amended City Hills Code, Title 2, Chapter 3, related to the Utica City Council.
All right. So, in reviewing some of this code, we felt in discussion with the mayor, We thought that it was best the city address some of our new city council codes and how members are appointed and how advisors are appointed and some of the expectations. To be clear, the expectation of YCC is that they're run similar to how you run your, run it by Robert's Rules of Order, meetings are noticed, there's minutes taken, and there's recordings. Where they have a budget, they're subject to these same public meeting laws that we work. So we want to make sure that they're being run properly. On the appointments, right now, the minimum requirement for a YCC member is that it kind of holds. YCC members are 14 to 18 years old, unless it's this. I'm proposing that we make, because there's a curriculum that credit is given in high school, I'm proposing that they maintain a certain grade point average. What that is, I believe up to you if you want to pursue that idea. Additionally, I want to add language that discussed how the YCC advisor would be appointed and that they would serve for a period of 2 years upon which they may be reappointed and that the YCC advisor may be appointed from city first from the city council. And then under 2-3-4, duties and responsibilities, to be very clear, the YCC is, they act as the liaison between the city and the community, and they've done a great job with that. They identify projects of the community that they can improve on. They've traditionally been involved with the Easter egg hunt, with the Supper Santa program that the city does. But one thing I want to be very clear of is item number F, and that is to complete service projects and other duties assigned by the city council. So I want to be able to give direction from the mayor and city council to the YCC and having them execute that. And then finally, under 2-3-8, meetings, just to be very clear, that all YCC agendas should be those 24 hours in advance of any regular scheduled meeting. Where they have a budget, they now give money. They are holding to the same public notice rules as this body, the planning commission, the parks, the trails committee, and the family festival committee. So they need to be held to that standard.
Okay, so we will blank here on the grade point average. Is that something that you want to add to this ordinance?
Could I recommend 2.0?
That's what I was thinking. That's what the sports team should require.
The only reason I feel like if you're not at least getting a C average, you shouldn't be doing this kind of
activity to be focused on average. Yeah, 2.0 is what stuck out to me. It's an exceptional average. And just, while that seems low, it also, there might be kids who struggle in school but really want to be involved in civic activities. So, not too many exceptions. I have one. So I do get
exceptions. Where did it say that they had it before?
Oh, that's just how I read it. They just have to be alive between the ages of 14 and 18.
So I'm happy with that 2.0. Does anyone else have any ideas
about that? Obviously.
Okay. Any comments regarding any of the other changes that we are proposing with this YCC? Might be helpful to mention that we have in place Councilmember Allison and Councilmember Smith are going to be the advisors of the YCC. Until we can get some other advisors, let's just get it going and.
Well, that was on the consent agenda.
Yes. Yeah. Is there any discussion?
I had something to find higher than 2.0, but I can be talking to my expectations.
What were your expectations?
I would love to partner with YCC for some programs for the community.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to do that in the past, and I think that would be fantastic.
And you're just playing contact.
Yeah.
So.
Christmas things, Halloween things, stuff like that.
Yeah, great.
To that point, we had this. Somehow, the Parks and Trails Committee became in charge of the city breakfast and the Santa night. I don't know how that happened, but it happened. It's been going on a long time, so I think we need to correct some of the traditions for college. I would like to work with the fire department on making and having them be over to breakfast. I think that would be a nice solution to be involved.
Yeah.
And I would love to have the YCC be over at Santa. It seems like they'd like to piggyback on it, try to use it as a fundraising opportunity for the Supper Santa. You guys can order the brownies and order Santa.
But you don't have to put that in New York.
No,
that's just something that can be directed from the Santa.
That makes sense.
I
already requirement is higher, like a 2.5 or 3.0. But I get my thinking is if that's what the sports extracurricular requires, a 2.0, I can agree with that. But I think that if it's something that we continue with and we make it into a program that really helps these youth and gives them a springboard into the, you know, scholarship something, I think it's worth looking at typing that down the road.
And I'll bet the school would love to get involved in that now.
Yeah,
it's a problem that the whole council is, you know.
I have faith in that.
I don't think that's happening. I'm a jammer. You know, the higher the GPA, more likely that they're going to be involved. So.
Yeah. Let's
give it a try. I think it's going to be quite the reverse. The more likely they're involved, the higher the GPA will be.
I think last year the average GPA was just under 4.0 because it's on the council and city council stuff. It does attract that kind of
student. I'm totally good with starting here and then you would be revisiting it, Is that what you all have?
Yes. All right,
I will
accept a
motion on this
one.
Yes, it's B.
This is on the table. I'll make a motion to approve ordinance number 6-29-2021B, ordinance amending Title 2, Chapter 3 of the Cedar Hill City Code pertaining to the Youth City Council Advisory Committee. Subject to having a GPA requirement of 2.0.
Thank you. May I have a second? Second. Thank you. Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, second by Councilmember Ellison. Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passed unanimously. Moving to our last item on the agenda, review action on acceptance of the internal audit reports and progress assessment update. Mr. Goodwin.
As part of the testing auditor's progress assessment checklist. The city is required to use certain number of internal audits and perform an internal audit function. So this is something that we do. This we do obviously do our required audit externally that we contract with. But internally we have never done audits. And so this is kind of a new challenge to tackle. And so we tasked a number of staff members to come up with a certain number of audits that we felt could benefit various departments. We tried to find various audits that we could do in each department. And as time presented itself to try to conduct these audits. So Jada Walton, who is our management intern, she's done two audits that we can report on. The first one is the petty cash reconciliation on a daily basis. Staff members that work at a cash drawer are supposed to reconcile that cash drawer at any issue. And that includes passports, and that includes front desk, and adults should be doing it. But this one was just the passport for the front desk and showed that we're actually missing some dates. So there's a good thing that came out of this in that we need to focus on saying, hey, this needs to happen every day. And this is the expectation. So there was a finding we did implement some changes there. So the finding was from a year ago. So what she did is she randomly picked some months and then looked at the reconciliation spreadsheets of this month, how many days were there, how many days did the reconciliation get done. The second one was also, I think, a fairly easy one, but it was on grammar requests. On grammar requests, the state mandates that there are certain criteria on how you have to respond to a grammar request in a certain time frame, and you, in order to make a response. And so we looked at various years. We looked at 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, so 5 years worth of data. And she looked at how long it took to respond. And she found that none of the requests took longer than the allotted 10 business days to be responded to. So kudos to Colleen. And that is no small feat, even though we're a small city, because we get a surprisingly large number of grammar requests. So,
she also just did one on background checks.
Yes, that was the next one we were doing. I don't have a report about that.
Oh.
But again, so we tried to identify areas where we could do self-assessments really in each department. And on the rec department, we require that coaches that work with youth sports get background checks. So the question is, okay, show me, here's a list of coaches, I want to see background checks for. So it's making sure that we're compliant with our policies and where we're not making any changes. So this is a healthy exercise. But there's, I don't believe there's anything, you have to accept the internal audit reports for the progress assessments. So you can, again, check this box. And there, this feels, I'll be honest, this feels like it's a bit of a hoop to jump through with the state auditor. So we're trying to make it meaningful in that we find areas where we can improve and maybe improve some of our performances and for the budget.
Do you go over the checklist?
No.
I have Brad questions there,
Well,
there, it's in their packet.
I don't have it in front of me, but we can talk about it. There's other items on the front list, health progress checklist that the city's required to do. So there are certain policies and procedures that the city has to have in place. We met those compliance and those requirements last year. We haven't changed any of those requirements. We did certain number of questions on CPA on staff, that's what Charlie's.
You did improve one because last year we didn't have an internal audit function.
So,
and you added that, so we got another 20 points.
So what this does is by showing you this, nothing else changed from previous year's reports to what we did do in internal audit. That was the one function on this last year. Which last year when we got our assessment,
there's other things, but yeah.
This is the low hanging fruit. Anyway, we're trying to comply with the state's requirements.
Okay. Any questions on the progress assessment on the audit reports? Okay, then I'll accept the motion.
I make motion to accept the internal reports.
May I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Councilmember Guinness, second by Councilmember Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
We'll email out the checklist to you guys so you can see it.
Okay, this is the last item on the agenda. This is a discussion on water conservation.
Here we are. We're at the end of June, and we've been tasked with saving water throughout the state. And we knew that approaching this water area was going to be very tight in that we had limited reserves from the Central Water Project. And then we felt like our ditch water was going to be very limited in that there wasn't a lot of runoff to be had. And so we came up with a plan that would kind of help us to get through the watering season with knowing that we had these limited reserves. Part of that plan was that we would not use water until May 1st. Part of that plan is also that we shut the system off on October 1st. So just to be clear, that is coming, that's still down the pipeline. But we also tasked the city, the golf course included, with parks and public areas to reduce water consumption by 20%, and we asked residents to do the same. This is just a pretty high level usage. You can see it there. Last year, this middle blue, I don't know what you want to call it, blue 2020. That's this. Last year we had one of our highest water usage years ever. In 2019, you recall that we had a really, really wet spring where it rained all the months, so we all threw the ball. No, it's great. You're correct. It was a really wet August. I think it was in 2016 or 2017. But last year, in 2019, when we started Harvey Park and tried to move dirt, it was just mud down there. And that's why you see this started really low, but then it went on the same slope as the rest of the years, just kind of late scale. So we save water in that regard. 2021 is a bit of a mixed bag. We're seeing a very average year right now. As a city, we're trying to reduce our water consumption. So if you look through the parks and look at the golf course, it's dry. It's really dry. And I want to commend golf because I know it just eats them. They want to have a nice, lush golf course. But they understand the constraints that they're under in terms of water consumption. Parks the same way. If you went down to the park at the Family Festival or Heritage Park, you saw that it was pretty dry down there. We've actually been lucky this year. I would say that we've had more ditch water than we expected, and we believe that by virtue of the mill ditch pipe project there, and that we're not losing as much water to conveyance as it goes through the creek. So there's more water than we have. Additionally, with that pipe project, we are able to access American Fork Water, or American Fork Irrigation Shares. That traditionally we haven't had access to because we haven't had a mechanism to deliver those to our system. So, which pipe project, we're able to, and we're going to love that we can now access those this year. So, we're working those. On CUP, we have 710 acre feet of water that we can use a year. This year, we have 550. And so we try to delay that as much as we can. I think up to this point, to the end of June, we're here somewhere in the low 30s that we use. So there's still a bit of water that we can use. We believe that we can keep our watering throughout the year. I think as a staff, we can do a lot better in messaging to the public in terms of what we want them to do. And reducing the amount of water that they're using, maybe reduce the day of the water in 3 days by two. Reducing the water time, and then we can reduce the water time by 20-30% each day, and water in 3 days a week, you're also reducing the day by that amount of water. So we're looking at ways we can conserve. However, like the city, you know, as a whole, we're doing okay. I don't want to wave a flag that we're doing awesome, but we're doing okay. There's no concern. We're having a hot spell. Many times it's hot, you see the usage go up. Additionally, once you start really saying there's limited reserves, you can't water, you have to water 2 days a week, all of a sudden what happens with any scarce resource that people feel like it's running out, they go put their sprinkler on because they feel like, well, there's only a little bit of water in the tank, I'm going to get some of it. So we also don't want to use that tactic either. We just want to educate residents on how they should water. So, with that being said, what questions can I answer? Any guidance you want to give to staff in terms of getting this message out to the residents?
Yeah, how do you want to do that? How do you want to go about it?
We've tried a number of methods over the years. 2015, this is our base year. This is the money, and this is our base year. This is the first year that we, I'm sorry, 2016 was the year that we instituted water restrictions. So 2015, the trend line shows no water restrictions in terms of on even days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Orange shows the first year that we instituted those.
Higher.
And some of that could be a little bit of growth. I don't know. It's hard to say exactly. Yeah, temperatures change. Really, the biggest indicator of what will change usage is weather. That changes. Nothing else I've seen changes. So you really have to dive into behavior, and it's really, really difficult to get people to water less. It's a self-sacrificing measure. There's not a cost associated with it, right? So you use less, and your water, your neighbor uses more. You feel like, why am I doing this? I understand why people feel that way. But what we still have to say, I think we have a responsibility to educate and say this is what we need to do.
So I think our biggest move we've done actually is tonight the parks grants. That's going to be a huge physical message. And I don't think we're going to do that. So now getting that message out would be very easy to make it.
So we're still requiring people to put in trees. Let's see, you want to put in here, you put a simple drip system into a tree that waters the tree that doesn't overspray into the gutter. One of the most frustrating things I see is, and the city is guilty of this sometimes, when we overspray a road and 40% of what we're using is just going down a slope. Or when you see, you can follow this trail of water in the gutter for 2 blocks, and you can see somebody just completely flooding from a flood irrigating their lawn for sprinkler. That's also very frustrating. So the more we can kind of change some of this behavior, I think we would have to save the water.
Yeah, I would have never known about it like that. I've always preferred education. Put out the message out the park strips, put out the message out where we're at and say, hey, we're doing awesome, keep at it. That's we stay positive
and to that point I have very limited staff resources. So if there are more draconian requirements in terms of you shall not water between the hours of 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. could we try to enforce that, but I don't know if Elon's asking me to have the time right now to go do that.
No, it's
Jenny issued anything this year at all.
Well,
so,
and I'm going to be really helpful to put these things out again. Like some people in the city might not know, but they're not supposed to water between those hours. So just say,
Well, we recommend that we don't, but then they say, again, they say, the city, why are you watering those hours?
And explain why they water during those hours.
Do we have a way of, finding ideas about best practices such as, like, I got the, weather sensing system. And it will go for, 5 minutes on one station and go around and then it goes back around.
It's a self cycle.
Yeah, like, educate, well, hey, this is a good way to get it done and use less and might actually be more effective.
There's resources that the Central Utah Water Project does, puts out with conservation, Utah Conservation District also puts out a lot of good material that we can give you back on. Other communities have also done it too. They, I had a meeting today down at the county, with the county emergency manager, and they want us to have all these, do all these things in terms of emergency management, but I just don't have the staff or the budget to hire a dedicated emergency manager, so that role is placed on the staff. That's going to be me. But it's kind of the same thing with water, is that we don't have to replicate everyone's efforts. We can, great thing about government, we can plagiarize. And so we can go steal some of their, the thing is they have to share.
Yeah,
we can go steal some of the materials that they've put out. Obviously, their numbers are proprietary to them. But the methods, the message, we can use that. So I think we, as staff, need to do a better job of finding some of those messages that we want to put out. Another thing we talked about is that is weather stations. So golf has got their weather station, and golf's a big user of water and heating. So for golf to put on a weather station that directly ties into some of the areas where they're seeing high winds or high temperatures, and they can water more efficiently. There should be a reciprocal change in some of the numbers you see on the city. Likewise, we talked about the city investing in a weather station for the general community, the general population, so it's more localized weather data. The problem is, I believe, who has a smart control? Right? Where's the weather station tied into the U.S.?
It wasn't close.
Yeah, see, mine, I think it wasn't growing, but mine's tied into the Linden, which is
the I think that's where I'm at, too.
And so it's the weather system that you're seeing down in Linden by the lake is not the same as what you see here. So what we want to do is promote some local information, some better data that way, instead of some conservation efforts as well. So we've got their weather station going, and we're hoping in the next few months to get the city weather station get some information on that.
Is that the new one down there by the maintenance building? They just took the one up here and relocated it down, and they just have to hook up the wireless connection now. I know it's a recent added, I don't know how long it's been there.
Last week.
I bet you know the house is on the grid there. He's out and he's fine.
I don't have public, data yet. I mean, we could even use that one. I mean, the only problem is it's the bottom of the debris basin. So the winds you see there, some of the systems don't have a wind sensor that is over a certain mile per hour, it won't water. So it's windy down there, the calm up here. And they're set to that system with water here, so that's why I say you have to have a localized system.
Yeah, that's why I said that these houses on the edge here tend to have the same wind they have down there. But.
So okay, that might be one we would think about. I don't know. Any questions on water conservation? Happy to answer. It's been a long night. Appreciate your patience.
Thank you.
Oh, one more thing. We are not having the July 6th house open.
Yes.
So are we just having the one then for July?
Maybe the third week. All
right, thank you everybody. Thank you for everything. I will hand you a question to adjourn our council meetings.
Great motion to be there.
Thank you, Councilmember Reyes. Is there a second? Councilmember Miller, all in favor?
Aye.
Councilmember Miller, all in favor?